all these social media, let's say, tools that we use are all censored, and sometimes my accounts are shut down. And even on Facebook or Instagram, you get censored for some posts. So it's very delicate. It's not easy. In our country, size is very important, and men are so obsessed with size. They all think that they have a small penis, and they all want to use products to get a bigger penis. And we have so many misconceptions about size and how you can grow up or make your penis grow.
From 2728 Pictures, this is Just Dropping In, a show about the global influencers and creators who are reframing the lens on people, places, and ideas. I'm J.R. Byersmith, and on this episode, we're diving into the journey of Dr. Sandrine Atala, a pioneering doctor of sexology in a place you may least expect.
Still going to work. I always listen to podcasts while I drive, because there's always a lot of traffic.
With shades on, as stylish and as cool as the city that passes by our driver's side window, the woman who is dominating social media in the heart of the Middle East is now recording a video with the same hand that's guiding her car down the bustling streets of Beirut.
Yes, I know I'm doing something a bit dangerous.
She was thoughtful enough to send 7 of these over the course of her day.
But I just wanted to show you how we drive and how we live in Lebanon.
Now we are arriving to my office.
Each one of them, a short glimpse into a life of a pioneer in a city and in a region who deserves a doctor like this, who cares like this.
Out of 7 patients today, I saw 7 males, and they all had the same problem, psychogenic erectile dysfunction.
So what we've heard about in these videos, and again the next morning at the American University in Beirut, is the clinical side of her practice.
Beirut, it's a very, very nice university with very nice campus.
Part of what's propelled her, and she will openly admit this, is her old TV show, and now her social media channels. On this night, she's had nearly 20 posts tackling clitoracy. That's the understanding that the clitoris is fundamental to a female orgasm. Her biggest following is on YouTube, though. That's where she has multiple playlists with videos like this one that have over 500,000 views. It's in Arabic, but see if you can make out a few words before she explains what's going on. The video, it's called Homemade Toys.
موجودة بالبيت كرمال تزيدوا شوية سبايسز لحياتكم الجنسية. أولا هالنيوتيلا بدل ما تاكلوها وتنصحوا وتخففوا من رغبتكم أم إثارتكم الجنسية، ليه ما بتستعملوها كرمال؟
What were the homemade toy ideas you came up with?
Well, it's silly ideas, but maybe we don't think about them. It's like just using a scarf to blindfold your partner or to cuff his hands, or using chocolate to eat it over his body or her body, using ice cubes on the body of the partner, or just using an electrical toothbrush as a vibrator, or a small massage, you know, the small massage devices that vibrate, to use them as vibrators. And, well, I don't remember the other ideas, because I told you the videos are spontaneous. And this video was criticized a lot, and a lot of people laughed about it.
GR, first of all.
That's Dr. Paula Atala, Sandrine's mom. She's an endocrinologist, diabetologist, and president of the Lebanese Society for Endocrinology and Diabetes. She knows a thing or two about medicine, especially here in Lebanon, where bouts of civil war and regional conflicts have complicated life for the 4 million who call this nation nestled between Israel and Syria along the Mediterranean Sea home.
It's a very rare specialty, and really we are in need, not only in Lebanon, or in all countries, we are in need of good sexologists, because it's a very important problem for patients and even for doctors, and we don't know really how to deal with those patients. They need really someone who is really specialized to talk to them and to give them the solution to their problems.
Sometimes those solutions get lampooned.
Okay.
That's the audience of a late night show, laughing. Here's Dr. Sandrine.
What he did, he used the video to give me an award of the worst advice of the year. And then he got a box of chocolate of Nutella, because in the video I talked about Nutella. I was not advertising for Nutella. It's chocolate paste. And he got it in his studio and he just made fun of it in a very silly way.
Do you have to respond to that guy or do you just not worry about it? You just go on.
Well, the first time I did, because it happened several times, and then I felt it was just useless. And if he's so, if people want to laugh about it, well, at least they're laughing.
I was going to say, you have to be relevant before you can be made fun of.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
More on that later. First, how she got to this place. When Sandrine was just 23, she started suffering from severe depression and panic attacks. It was her fifth year of med school, and she was over it. When she entered the program at 18, it was almost a given that she would be a doctor. Both of her parents are, so it seemed a logical fit, until it wasn't.
When I told them I want to stop, they begged me, please don't stop, just continue, become a doctor, and then you choose whatever field you want.
She became a doctor. And the field she chose? Sexology.
A real description of the clitoris. We only knew about the head of the small tip of the clitoris. Actually, the clitoris, it's not just this little button.
I wanted something more human, more into relationships, and more also social culture. Because I was shocked by the difference in mentality between me and the people around me. Especially in med school, because in med school we are all nerds, and people are more from, it's true, people are more from conservative backgrounds. And this is how I told my parents afterwards, I want to go to France, I want to go do something else, and I chose hypnotherapy and sexology.
Did you ever tell your parents all these people are nerds?
No, I didn't tell my parents. So I went to France and I didn't plan to come back. I didn't know how I was going to continue.
In her second year in Paris, she was supposed to fly home to Beirut, but that was the summer of 2006, and a small conflict had broken out between Hezbollah and Israeli forces. The airport was completely blocked. In old AP footage, you can see bombs destroying airport runways and innocent civilians being killed. It's hard to watch. She wanted to go back and serve her country. That's where she was needed. Here's Dr. Sandrine.
Also, when I was in France, I discovered that I didn't like the mentality so much.
Why?
That I didn't have empathy I was in Paris. I didn't have empathy with these people. I felt they were from another universe or another planet. And I felt that I could work with my social culture background and do good instead of just throwing it away in the garbage and try to be someone else.
But what planet were they from? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why were these Parisians feeling like they're from a different planet? Because of how you grew up?
It's me. I felt that they were from a different planet. It's their mentality is very different. Their needs are different. Because they have everything. It's you don't know the context of Lebanon. We grew up with war. Yeah. Until now, we don't have electricity every day, so we have a local generator. Sometimes we run out of water. Sometimes we don't have an internet connection. So we're living in a some sort of continuous danger. And of course we have the beach at 15 minutes away from home, but we don't have the basics, and it's a very different mentality. We're very into family, into rituals, into habits, and it's very different.
It's an advanced culture, but like I keep seeing this in my experiences of travel and talking with different folks around the world, that when society reaches, and I don't mean to paint a broad brush, but it just seems that this was your experience as well, is when a society reaches a certain point of advancement, that like the collective struggle as a nation, when some of that starts to dissipate, you almost lose some of that village effect and some of that ritual effect of of being in a struggle together.
Exactly. I thought what my country needs me more, and sexuality is so difficult and so taboo in my country, I can help these people. When I got back to Lebanon in 2007, no one thought that I could really succeed in my work. Even my friends, I have a close friend, she told me 2 years ago, when you came back, I was sure you were never going to work in Lebanon.
Wow.
And no, I did. Yeah. It was a bad one.
It's amazing, though. That's so empowering.
Yeah. And
to know that you can affect that kind of change, and even your closest friends are now saying, look at you. Like, you're still doing this.
Exactly. And here, at least I know that I'm doing something. Maybe in France, I would be the slummed doctor. I'm not doing anything, not any change or any impact in my society. And here I can have an impact. And it's a great adventure.
Yes, I always have the impression that people think that the first intercourse is something like this.
When I first asked Dr. Sandrine who's coming to see her, the list of patients' needs was endless. That's why talks like this one, where she can demystify sex for young people, is such a big deal. It's not just individuals she sees either. Oftentimes it's couples, some curious, some scared, some religious, some unconsummated.
Most commonly, most frequently, the woman is a virgin, not the man, but sometimes both of them are, and they cannot have this first sexual intercourse. Because of what we call vaginismus, it's involuntary contractions of the vagina, and it will produce pain during intercourse or even an impossibility to have an intercourse. Or it's related to what we call honeymoon impotency. It's when the man is too afraid of his first time and he's losing his erection because of this first time, this fear, let's say.
And so people are coming to you with that fear.
Yes.
We haven't consummated our marriage yet.
Yeah. It's very, very frequent. So here the clientele is a bit different from what a sexologist would see in the States, for example, because usually people do not wait for their wedding or marriage to have a first sexual intercourse. But vaginismus and dyspareunia is pain during sexual intercourse, do exist in the States. But for vaginismus, it's less frequent than in Arab countries.
What is the most common thing that happens for the women? Like, is it a fear-based thing? Is it a response thing?
Because
like the body's shutting down because it's foreign? Or
exactly.
What is the...
It's a psychosexual, psychosomatic symptom. And it's because she's afraid or because she has this thought brought to her from society that... first-time sex is painful, or that the vagina is too fragile, is too small for the penis to be into it. It's maybe related to lack of sexual education or sexual awareness. And sometimes it's related to a trauma, sexual trauma, sexual abuse, or even rape or sexual aggression.
What are they coming to you for, mostly, especially younger people?
It can be questions about contraception, about how to get aroused, different sexual practices, different sexual positions, how to get an orgasm. The most frequent question that we get usually is, am I normal? It's a very, very frequent question, and I guess it's all around the world, because we picture that sexuality should be like in porn movies or in magazines, even women magazines. They have such a fake idea of sexuality. Any romantic comedy will picture sex in a weird way. I don't know if you can picture a sex scene in a movie. Mm-hmm. The woman gets her orgasm directly and she screams out of pleasure. There is no condom. There is no sperm getting out. So people think that
it's
sexuality
like this perfectly
is like
clean
this.
Process. Like, woo, that's
yeah.
all great. Okay, next scene.
And so pleasurable process, yeah.
And it's not like that.
No, knowing that Because we know that a woman cannot reach an orgasm from penetration. Not all women do reach an orgasm from penetration. Only 30% of women do. So you have 70% of women who are not reaching an orgasm through penetration and who think that they should have an orgasm through penetration, or they think that they should climax
simultaneously
at the same moment. Yes, at the same moment with their partner. So yeah, we get a lot of questions about that.
I don't think that if you asked most people, they would have any idea about that 70% number. And I've even heard numbers lower than that. Like I've heard...
Yeah, exactly. Some women do not know that their clitoris is there.
Wow. Think for a minute what it must have been like to return to Beirut in 2007 and build a practice in a profession few have ever heard of. And all of her patients had to pay out of pocket. It was next level entrepreneurial hustle.
What I did in the beginning, I approached as many doctors as I could to let them know about me and for them to refer me the patients. It's getting started is difficult because it's a private practice.
And then once you get clients to come in, do you feel like they can share with each other? You know, like one client comes in and gives a word of mouth kind of referral?
Not in sexology, because it's...
Really?
What do you say to your friends? I had an erectile dysfunction and this is a good doctor. You don't...
I feel
want
embarrassed
to say
for
that.
Asking now. It's like, oh yeah, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's so embarrassing. Yeah. You're not going to say that to anyone. Oh, I didn't have any orgasms. You cannot say that. So...
But I retract the question. It was too dumb. No, it makes so much sense now. Like when you say it so plainly, it's like, oh yeah, you would never do a referral. You would never tell a friend you did that.
I usually ask my patients, how did you arrive here? Did any doctor refer you to me? Or how did you know that I exist? And now they tell me Google, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. It's not their sister or their friend or their neighbor. It's everything is done online now.
One of your videos on YouTube has, I don't know, like 2 million views. And it's on, is it safe to go oral?
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the direct translation. Like what's happening in that video and what did you want to say there and why did it take off?
Well, actually, I think you didn't see the video with the 14 million views.
Okay, well, then let's talk about that one first. What's that one?
It's in the Lulia channel, and it's about the size matter.
And why does that one get so much attention? I mean, I guess for the obvious reasons, but...
Because in our countries, size is very important, and men are so obsessed with size. They all think that they have a small penis and they all want to use products to get a bigger penis. And we have so many misconceptions about size and how you can grow up or make your penis grow. So this is why I have the most views on this video. The other one about oral sex. Well, it's about if you should wear a condom or dental dam when you practice oral sex, if you can transmit sexually transmitted infections through oral sex. It's also about oral cancer because you can get HPV through oral sex, and info about swallowing semen because a lot of people think that swallowing semen is bad for your health.
Oh, so you're trying to knock down some of those myths too inside of there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that one that has 14 million views now. And what did you say? Because if people are wanting like male enhancement, and we know that penetration like isn't all, you know, only 30% of the time leads to orgasm. Is that what you're addressing inside that video?
Yes.
It's like, hey, if you're going to be a guy and you actually want to bring something to the table here, it's not that.
Exactly. I try to get the message that you have hands and tongue and a mouth that you can use during sex, and that the size is not so important, and it's not important, even though some partners prefer, let's say, bigger organs, but some other would prefer smaller organs. Like if I don't know, some people like big breasts, some people like small breasts. It's not because they are using it for their pleasure, but because it's associated to more arousal.
I don't know if you felt it as much in Lebanon, but as we get to this, we've seen the Me Too movement and female empowerment and trying to knock through some of these glass ceilings about what women actually want. Have you seen that reflected at all in your practice? Like either guys or girls or women demanding, hey, I want more from this and I can speak up and say what I want.
Yeah.
I know it's private, but have you seen that at all?
More and more, because in the beginning, when I started my practice, I didn't have a lot of women coming for a desire or orgasm issues. And I had more female consulted me more for pain during sexual intercourse. And men was, let's say, the majority of the patients coming to my clinic for erection or ejaculation or desire issues. And now more and more women are coming to the clinic because they want to talk about their own pleasure, and they want to talk about orgasm, and they want to talk about their bodies, their clitoris, their vaginas, and they're not sex objects for their partners.
How can men be more supportive of understanding that this is a real thing, that women aren't getting what they want most times, like even 70% of the time, as you said earlier?
They need to read about it, to get sex educated, maybe to watch more videos about the topic, and also to talk frankly with their partners. Some men or women, they're not paying attention to the other part of the equation, and they forget that it takes two to tango, and they're only focused on the timing of penetration. This is why we get so many men coming for premature ejaculation, and they really think they're doing it for their partner. And when I ask them, but you're sure that your partner is bothered with your quick ejaculation? They tell me yes. And I tell them, did you ask the question? They just answer, no, I can feel it. So here you see that there is no communication or dialogue about sex. And it's very important because some women do not mind a quick ejaculation if you have long caresses all through, let's say, the whole process.
Meaning if all the foreplay and everything else getting to that is...
Yeah, we try not to call it foreplay anymore and to call it sex play.
Really?
Yeah, because if we call it foreplay, it means that penetration is so important. And it's only about the intercourse. It's the main objective of sex. But if you call it sex play, well, it's sex all the way from the beginning till the end of it. And you can have penetrative sex or non-penetrative sex and enjoy it as much.
Huh.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in your clinic now, and I'm just listening.
Exactly.
Like, all right, tell me more. Yeah, what should I help me find better vocabulary?
It's moving sex from away a bit from the penis, because sex is so penile centered, and we're trying we're trying to like shift a bit the perception or the conception of sexuality.
The whole purpose of why I do this podcast is to reframe the lens, is to like push the thinking so that you think about something that you never really thought about in a completely different light. And you just did that for me. I didn't expect it to be that, but the idea of sex play, that it's like a continuous process, but all the focus being on the penis itself, I didn't ever think about that.
So
you know that that's the case if the numbers are producing what they are, but you said it so simply that I always say that it rushes over you and you're like, oh wow, I've been not thinking about that properly for far too long.
You just got a free consultation, I guess.
Well, thank you. One of the videos that you just posted, and I think even just to say the word sometimes, you know, if you're a heterosexual male, is anal, like the anal sex video that you just put up.
Yeah.
When you're releasing a video like that in Lebanon, how does that play?
Such videos, usually people will tell you, oh, this is a nasty video. It's not a nice video. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's bad. It's shameful. It's against religion. But when you see the questions on offline or on DMs, like on Instagram, you know that, no, it's an important topic, but no one wants to admit it.
What do you say in that video? Because I don't understand Arabic. What were you trying to impart?
Well, I'm just talking about safe anal sex, how to you can have anal sex without being painful for your partner, that it's not harmful for your health, and that you are also entitled to say no if you don't want to have anal sex, but you should always use the condom. And this is about it. But you need to know that in monotheist religions, anal sex is forbidden. And this is why it's such a controversy. It's against religion.
So it's a tough line to walk, given where you are.
Yeah. It's very difficult, especially that all these social media, let's say, tools that we use are all censored. And I got a lot of, reports from my accounts, and sometimes my accounts are shut down. And even on Facebook or Instagram, you get censored for some posts. So it's very delicate. It's not easy. I'm not censored for LGBTQ content, but for just sexual content.
Yeah, it makes your job really difficult.
Yeah, true.
Another place she can speak openly is in front of her peers. Here she is at the 3rd annual Lebanese LGBT Health Conference, challenging the audience to think about older couples.
Now, every one of you, think about your teta and your junto, okay? Think about them having sex. Funny, but they are sexually active, they might masturbate. My grandma used to tell me, you know, after 12 on TV, they put some very weird movies. I told her, yes, but why do you watch them? So she was interested, she told me I was just curious, that's my right, I can watch these movies too. So yes, older people, they have feelings. You can have an orgasm until you're dead, and it's your right to have orgasm and to use your penis or your clitoris or any other part of your body to have pleasure.
What do your parents think about, you know, your ability to communicate this messaging and your friends?
Well, for example, my dad is a well-renowned radiologist in Lebanon, and he does a lot of mammographies, and so he sees a lot of women, and patients usually talk with him. And they always tell him, oh, we saw the latest video of your daughter, and sometimes they have negative comments. And one time my dad called my mom and he told her, there's a weird video of your daughter online, and I got it on WhatsApp, and it's really weird. And my mom called me and she told me, what did you do? Did you do a porn movie? I told her, no, it's just a video about doing your sex toys at home. And because we don't have sex toys in Lebanon, it's illegal. So I did the video about how to invent your own sex toys at home. So it's funny, I guess.
Yeah, what did your mom say? Did she have a problem with it?
No,
or was she just like, come on.
She laughed.
Like, I don't need your dad calling me anymore about you in these videos.
She laughed. She told me it's such a silly video. She told me we should open a sex shop in Lebanon. I told her, no, we're not opening any shop in Lebanon. We're just doctors in our clinics.
Wait, so your mom's like wants to be an advocate for this too. Like she really wants to advance the conversation.
Yeah. And I usually invite my mom to the TV show, or to the, if I have a radio show, I'm going to invite her to the podcast too, because she's very fun and open-minded about the topic, and it's usually a great conversation that we have.
Speaking of mom, here she is. She had one more thought she wanted to share on her way to the airport for a short vacation with Sandrine.
Hi, GR, it's me again. I really think that she is a pioneer in the field. For sure, for some patients, for some doctors, and for the common people, maybe, it's something really special, that's speciality. And how come they could think, how come a girl, a doctor, specifically a woman, could deal with this?
What else do you want to accomplish? Like, how do you, because you're already a pioneer in my eyes, in a lot of people's eyes. So how do you keep, or are you exhausted now? Has it been too much of an uphill battle?
Oh, I'm not exhausted. In my idea or in my point of view, it would be good to have like a sexuality course in all university, and whatever the major is, and I think that would be very empowering for everyone. And I think today our target should be all over the nation and maybe all over the Arab world, if it's possible. It's not today that I'm going to see the results, but maybe in 10 years, I can see the change. Like I saw the change in these last past 10 years.
Is there anything that I should have asked you that I didn't? I'm thinking you have such a cool everyday, it seems like, that most people don't get to access.
Well, when I started practicing in Lebanon, I felt that we had a lot of, let's say, taboo issues like masturbation, virginity, oral sex, anal sex. And now that I'm on social media, I noticed from other colleagues in the US and in Europe, they tackle the same topics. And it allows me to understand that no, it's sexuality is taboo everywhere because it's very intimate and it's very personal. So yes, it's normal to feel embarrassed with a stranger to talk about it, but it's also about health and well-being and quality of life, and people should not feel embarrassed to talk about it with a therapist or with a doctor because it's a right.
There's just so many just lack of information that's out there. And that's why I was saying earlier about like growing up in St. Louis and these pioneering researchers did this work and I didn't find out about it until it became a show on Showtime. Like, how is that possible? That's amazing to me.
It starts from, I think, education, from the childhood education. When mothers ask me, how should we talk about sex with our children? I tell them it's like any other topic. It's normal. When you tell your son or your daughter, this is your eyes, you can tell them this is your penis or this is your clitoris. And it's not shameful. It's your own body. And it's very important for you to live your life in a healthy and satisfying way. And we shouldn't feel shameful about it.
And then what about older folks? That's my last question. As you get on, do you ever see older clients that come in and say, hey, should I still be sexually active as much? Like, what do I do? Like,
yeah, my oldest patient was 80. And it was a lovely couple. He was 80. She was 77. They came to me hand in hand. And he told me that I want to have an erection. And I told him, are you sure she wants you to have an erection? And he told me, yes, I'm here for her, actually. I want her to feel that I'm still aroused by her. I don't care about having penetration. I just want to make her feel that I still desire her. And it was so sweet and so nice.
That is really sweet. What did you say?
Well, I did some blood tests. He had a very low testosterone level, and we did the hormonal therapy with testosterone, and I gave him some medication for his erection because he could take medication and take the hormonal substitution, and they were very happy. They didn't engage into intercourse with penetration, but they were sexually active their own way.
You know, and I'm realizing the bias of my question, too. My first question should have been, what did she say she wanted?
She said that she wanted him to feel happy as well, and that she enjoyed the cuddling and the caressing, and it would be nice for him to be reacting, too, because she felt that she was only feeling the pleasure and he was not.
Stupid question. How many more years could they go feeling that pleasure? I mean, I guess it goes forever, but, like, to properly, like, when would you stop saying, like, hey, I'm going to give you a testosterone, like, your levels are too low?
Sexuality can go on until you're not on earth anymore. It doesn't have any limit. But if you have low testosterone level, you might not feel the desire to be sexual anymore. And this is why if a person has low desire, and other symptoms of low testosterone, we test the testosterone and we might give a treatment if the person wants a treatment. In women, it's different because after menopause, they have low estrogen levels, but they still feel desire and arousal. They just can go on because they can reach orgasm till they're less breath. And it's a different, sexuality is a bit different if we compare.
And guys should be checking in with that, right? Like if they understand that you can find it till your last breath, then the discovery is knowing that that can happen.
Exactly. But you, as I said earlier, you can be sexual just by kissing, touching, caressing, mm-hmm. masturbating, using sex toys. You're not obliged to have a penis into another sexual organ penetration. It can be in another way. And with age, maybe you just accept this fact, but you can have a different sexuality and it's still enriching and pleasurable.
This was so interesting. I'm so glad we got to talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell your husband sorry for taking all your time.
That's okay. Right. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Have a nice day. Bye.
Bye. If you haven't already, remember to rate, review, subscribe, and tell all your friends. For more, you can follow us on IG, Facebook, and Twitter at Just Droppin' In. And I'm JR Byersmith. Thanks for listening.